It is April 19th, 2023, and today, well, the time, actually, first of all, the time is 13:14 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green here. Today, our study will be the end of the chapter of Genesis in the Bible, and there will be Proverbs as well, one verse, and we'll have a video from Dr. Cathcart III, Dr. Robert Cathcart III. Let's listen to this for starters, and then we'll do the Wild Road, Part 1, Chapter 7, Paragraph 1. Dr. Robert Cathcart III, talking about massive doses of nutrients having visible effects.
That massive doses of nutrients above those certain amounts didn't do any good. And so I think most physicians who haven't had time to think about it really believe this, that it won't do any good. But the fact of the matter is that when we try these things, then they do have an effect. Now, why would this be? Now, when a person actually gets sick, they have some metabolic defects so that they may not be absorbing nutrients or utilizing nutrients the way that a healthy person should utilize it. Just for example, I have found that a large percentage of elderly people will feel a lot better with B12, folic acid, and B100 shots. Now, there's no precedence for that. The old GPs used to do this, but then when they got more scientific and they couldn't come up with any reason for this, they stopped doing it. Nevertheless, these people feel better. I have now had three ladies in their 90s who were pretty sharp, but they gave the history that they had to stop playing bridge a few years ago because they couldn't remember the cards anymore. Well, within a week of getting their B12 shots, they were out playing cards again. Now, so the metabolic defects, see, we get inefficient in our absorption of nutrients, in our utilization of nutrients, and so forth like that, as we get older, or with certain metabolic, even genetically determined defects. And so that, let's say, if you have a defect where you're not absorbing zinc properly, then you might get something like acne. Here's an example, is that teenage boys very frequently get acne when they go through puberty. Now, somehow or another, this zinc deficiency creates a suppression of the immune system that lets this puny bacteria take advantage of this. Well, the conventional treatment for this is to use something like tetracycline to knock off the bacteria. But the problem is that doesn't cure the zinc deficiency. And so that kid now, when he gets 50, 60 years old, is likely to have a heart attack from a zinc deficiency. So we look upon acne as a precursor warning sign of a zinc deficiency in teenage kids, you see. Now, if they didn't eat junk food, probably they wouldn't get the zinc deficiency, you see. So a lot of these things sort of compound up.
Okay. So there are B12 deficiencies and there are zinc deficiencies. B12, I know that's one that I particularly do eat myself, is a B12 supplement. And that is apparently very useful. Before I started taking that, I was suffering some symptom at the time. But I believe I was getting dizzy at that time. But anyway, the B12 resolved my problem that I was having. But B12, we don't understand the complexities entirely. No one does, of the human body. So if we can take food that is essential, beneficial, such as all the essential vitamins, and we get overall health, we get good health from it, or all of our signs of bad health disappear, then we can based on that alone, that's really the only indication that we can use to say that these things are useful or beneficial, because we don't know enough about how things work. Even though we should try to learn other things. For example, we were talking about, Dr. Cathcart was talking about experiments in vitro or in test tubes, in glass, in other words, glass experiments in the lab. Those are still good to do those. It's still good to do those experiments. Of course, we should still try to learn things outside of the human body by studying the way elements, different molecules interact with each other. That's a useful thing to study. But in the end, we can only learn based on what happens within the body, in vivo, in the human body, in the life form itself, how these things interact. So our chapter 7, paragraph 1, this is a very let's see now, I've prepared this. Let me get an idea how I want to start here. Of some interest. Right, okay. Yeah, well, the chapter is called Foothold. That's what I should start with. The chapter is called Foothold in the Sinai. We've been talking about the chronology based on the Egyptian calendar and the Bible and how those things relate, along with astronomy, the rising of Sothis and the summer solstice. And now, in this chapter, having established the Egyptian calendar's relation to the blessed genealogy at the time of Nimrod's rule and centuries before that, for example, the time of the deluge and the time of Adam, too, we can doubtless state the Exodus date with more confidence than ever. Egyptian month of Passion, also called Passions, the sixth day, which is the Julian day, May 3rd, 1493 BCE. May 3rd, 1493 BCE. This was a Friday, and as discussed in On, which is also called Joseph and On, Redemption of the Phoenix, that article, as discussed in On, based on Exodus 12 and 41, it is 430 years to the very day after the appointment of Joseph as second ruler of Egypt. Let's read that, 12 and 41 of Exodus, 12 and 41, right? It's not Genesis, it's Exodus, 12 and 41. And it came about at the end of the 430 years, it even came about on this very day that all the armies of Jehovah went out of the land of Egypt. Okay, that was Exodus 12 and 41. Let's come back to our article. Furthermore, Israel began observance of the Sabbath. This was the very first observance of the Sabbath in Israel's history, on IR 22nd, which was 36 days after Nisan 15 in 1493 BCE, based on the cycles of the moon, and a Saturday, based on the days of the week, as were Jewish Sabbath days afterward. They were always Saturday, but this was the very first one. This makes the first Jewish Sabbath day 5 weeks, one day, after May 3rd, 1493, right? Five weeks and one day is 36 days. Five times seven is 35, plus one is 36. Or on Saturday, June 8th, 1493 BCE. May 3rd, plus 28 days, takes us to May 31st, and eight more days to make up 36 from 28. 28 plus 8 is 36. Eight more days will make it June 8th, since June is the month after May. At Numbers 33:10-15, the wilderness of Sin was between Elam and the wilderness of Sinai as Israel left Egypt. The account of Israel's journey thus mentions Sinai. Numbers 33:10-15. Right. Let's look that up. What if we looked up Sinai in our search engine here? What if I search for Sinai? What will I find? Will I find it quickly or will it be hard? Numbers. What were we looking at again? What was the place again? Numbers 33. 10 to 15. Okay, Numbers 33, 10 to 15. Here's one. Okay, it's the wilderness of Sinai right here. They pulled away from Elim in verse 10 and went camping by the Red Sea. It's Numbers chapter 33, verse 10. And when we read further down in verse 15, they pulled away from Rephidim and went camping in the wilderness of Sinai. So Sinai is clearly mentioned as being on Israel's route as they departed from Egypt in the Exodus. Okay, once again, returning to our article, the wilderness of Sin was between Elam and the wilderness of Sinai as Israel left Egypt. Okay, the wilderness of Sin is between there. And so it's in that text. It's in the text too. History, Numbers 33, here it is. So it says here, verse 12, they pulled away from the wilderness of Sin and went camping at Dophka. Verse 11, they took up camping in the wilderness of Sin. So once again, the wilderness of Sin is between those two places. Okay, so the route. But the account of Israel's journey thus mentions Sinai. The route that the vast company traveled as they went out of Egypt's northern delta region has been studied over the years since that time by a number of people, including many scholars. And evidence in Sinai has been sought for the presence of Israel during that time concerned. Israel's number was some 600,000 able-bodied men from the Bible, thus millions, including women and children. However, the search may be looking for Ramesside items of pottery when searchers or researchers believe in a Ramesside date. And thus far, it is claimed that not a shard was found, overlooking not only dating, because they date the Exodus to the time of Ramesses, which is wrong in our chronology, but the temporary camps of Israel. They're overlooking that, because Israel may have carried only skins on the journey rather than pots. And they may have stopped, or they did stop, only briefly anyway. Of some interest, though, are inscriptions on the rock faces in certain locations in the Sinai Peninsula, and it is with them that the present chapter is concerned. So the only signs that we are able to study so far are these inscriptions on the rock faces in the Sinai Peninsula. That's what we're going to talk about in chapter 7. And so that will be, you know, our future days ahead. Now, we've also got something to say about what were we saying there? I'm just trying to remember what we were saying. Israel. Oh, yeah, right. Oh, there's another. There's a picture I wanted. That's what it was. A picture. I wanted to show you the picture. This is from the article. There's an illustration. You can click on it and it becomes bigger. Maybe I can publish that. I can probably publish that. It's just an illustration. If I can make it small enough as a file, I can upload it. This is just what can I do to make it smaller? There it is. It's the Hebrew alphabet, and it was produced by Charles Forster, and the editing was done by yours truly in 2016. But I didn't really edit anything, as I recall, other than to make the picture more visible or readable. I may have improved the contrast or done something to the image. But this is a table produced by Charles Forster in 1852, showing the Hebrew alphabet corresponding to the English alphabet, the Arabic alphabet, and the inscriptions in the Sinai Peninsula, which he found corresponded to these letters in these different alphabets, the letter Alpha, A or Aleph in Hebrew. Alpha would be the Greek corresponding. Arabic letter here is shown corresponding to the Hebrew Aleph, and then we see these corresponding letters in the Sinaitic inscriptions. But there are examples for maybe that's all of the Hebrew alphabet. We have to count them up and see. There should be 22 of them if it's the whole alphabet. But there could be more, maybe, if there are variations, such as S and SH, for example, or things. There are some variations of certain consonants in Hebrew. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. As far as Z. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. As far as SH, 15. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 21, 22. No, there are exactly 22 letters, and their corresponding letters, as documented by Charles Forster in 1852, from the Sinaitic inscriptions. Okay, so that's an interesting document. I hope I remember to look at that. I'll upload that if I can. So that's all for that study for today. Now, today's proverb, little children, is Proverbs 13 and 20. He that is walking with wise persons will become wise, but he that is having dealings with the stupid ones will fare badly. That's very, very good advice. So if we can find wise people, or if we know of some wise people, then it would be good if we could find a way to either be in touch with them or at least monitor their activities somehow, if we can, so we can learn from them and become wiser. Now, the other thing for today in the scriptures is Genesis, our final chapter of Genesis, chapter 50. Then Joseph fell upon the face of his father and burst into tears over him and kissed him. Because, of course, Jacob had just died. After that, Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel, and they took fully 40 days for him. For this many days they customarily take for the embalming. And the Egyptians continued to shed tears for him 70 days. Finally, the days of weeping for him passed, and Joseph spoke to Pharaoh's household, saying, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, speak please in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, Look, I am dying. In my burial place, which I have excavated for myself in the land of Canaan, is where you are to bury me. And now please let me go up and bury my father, after which I am willing to return." End quote. Accordingly, Pharaoh said, "Go up and bury your father, just as he made you swear." So Joseph went up to bury his father, and there went up with him all of Pharaoh's servants, the older men of his household, and all the older men of the land of Egypt, and all of Joseph's household, and his brothers, and the household of his father. Only their little children and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. there also went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and the camp came to be very numerous. Then they came to the thrashing floor of Atad, which is in the region of the Jordan. And there they carried on a very great and heavy wailing, and he kept up the mourning rites for his father 7 days. And the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, got to see the mourning rites in the thrashing floor of Atad. And they exclaimed, "This is a heavy mourning for the Egyptians." That is why its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is in the region of the Jordan. And his sons proceeded to do for him exactly as he had commanded them. So his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, the field that Abraham had purchased for the possession of a burial place from Ephron the Hittite in front of Mamre. Afterward, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all those who went up with him to bury his father, after he had buried his father. When the brothers of Joseph saw that their father was dead, they began to say, "It may be that Joseph is harboring animosity against us, and he will be sure to repay us for all the evil that we have rendered him." That was Joseph's brothers. So they expressed a command to Joseph in these words, "Your father gave the command before his death, saying, 'This is what you are to say to Joseph. I beseech you, pardon, please, the revolt of your brothers and their sin in that they have rendered evil to you. And now pardon, please, the revolt of the servants of your father's God.' And Joseph burst into tears when they spoke to him." Following that, his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, "Here we are as slaves to you." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you had evil in mind against me. God had it in mind for good, for the purpose of acting as at this day to preserve many people alive. So now do not be afraid. I myself shall keep supplying you and your little children with food." Thus he comforted them and spoke reassuringly to them. And Joseph continued to dwell in Egypt, he and the house of his father. And Joseph lived for 110 years. And Joseph got to see Ephraim's sons of the third generation, also the sons of Machir, Manasseh's son. They were born upon Joseph's knees. At length, Joseph said to his brothers, "I am dying, but God will without fail turn his attention to you, and he will certainly bring you up out of this land to the land about which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Hence Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, "God will without fail turn his attention to you. Accordingly, you must take my bones up out of here." After that, Joseph died at the age of 110 years. And they had him embalmed, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. That's the end of the chapter 50 in Genesis, and also the end of the chapter of the book, I should say, of the book of Genesis. It's the end of that. So we've finished the book of Genesis. That was quite an accomplishment to have read all of that, I think. To have studied it, to have... If you followed it all the way through, that was quite a lot of reading. So that's good. That's a lot of information, and it's from God's Word. It's beneficial to us to read the truth. We can see how true it is when we do some of the math and we see how the numbers add up and so on. For example, in the case of Joseph and how long he lived 110 years. So just as we learned about Levi, that he lived until about 1820 BCE, thereabouts, whereas Joseph, who was born about 1953, we said, BCE, 110 years later was the year 1843. 1953 minus 110 is 1843. So when Joseph died, it was about the year 1843. And that means that's actually about 23 years before Levi died. So we see there's no problem with the information that we had about Levi being the one who died, or the one who was the last of the sons of Jacob to die, I believe is what we learned when we studied that. And there's no contradiction, because Joseph was 110 when he died, and it's mentioned twice in verse, both in verse 22 and also in verse 26, that he died at the age of 110. It's confirmed by being mentioned twice how long Joseph lived. That's still a long time by today's standards, but in those days, Jacob lived 147 years, we learned. And a little bit, perhaps a little more, but about that long. That's 147 years compared to 110 for Joseph. We see that lifespan seemed to be getting shorter from the time of Abraham and Isaac, who lived 175 and 180 years respectively. And then Jacob 147 and Joseph 110. So that's today's study. It's very interesting that it's consistent with what we know about the Egyptian burial rites, where they bury the person's body 70 days. There's a period of 70 days in Egyptian ritual that we know about, and that's something we learn about outside the Bible too. It can be confirmed that this statement about the Egyptians is correct. The Bible is true on many matters, indeed every matter in which we can attempt to confirm the information, or with regard to which we have outside information, seems to be exactly correct when we look to the Bible and its reference to that information. Here's another example about the Egyptians and their 70 days of mourning, right? So that would mean the burial would end the period of the official period of mourning. It would put the official end to the official mourning period of, in their case, in the case of the Egyptians, 70 days is what it was. And there's the Bible saying 70 days, the same as what we've gotten from the scholars who talk about the Egyptian period of 70 days for this precursor to the burial. The time period preceding the burial. Okay, so it is Wednesday. It's April 19th, 2023, 1342 hours Eastern Daylight Time. It's going to be soon 1343 in a few seconds. And today I'm wearing, I could talk a little bit about my watches. I hope you enjoyed the study today, though, little children. And I hope that, thank you for watching, too. Thank you for watching, and welcome to the study today, and also to the further studies that we are hopefully going to be doing in various different places where we can find things to study that are worthwhile. And, hopefully the Bible, and also some of the articles, including the Wild Road article, we'll be continuing some of that. Also, we have my watch. Yeah, this watch, I notice there are ways. Cami runs, is it fast or slow? Fast? A little slow on my wrist, I think. Yeah, 55. Yeah, it's a couple of seconds slow. Cami's running a couple of seconds slow. So I can speed up Cami, and I can slow down Cami because Cami, it's a very slight effect, but because Cami runs so close to perfectly, I can actually make this particular watch run pretty accurately by the way I lay it down on the table. So if I lay the watch down, dial up, that means gravity won't have an effect. So it runs faster dial up, like that. But if I put the watch crown up, or even crown down, that has a gravitational effect which will cause the watch to slow down. So that's an effect that can be utilized to your benefit if your watch is, well, regardless, but if your watch is not running perfectly, even if your watch is running too fast by a large margin, or if it's running too slow by a large margin, you can still use that effect to some benefit. And it's not necessarily going to be the same for all watches either. But I've got, this is my watch that is the closest to being exact. And my other watch is about, Phibi. Phibi is quite a large number of seconds fast. Right now, it was running exactly correctly, and now is about, it was, yesterday, it was almost exactly in sync. It passed the point of being exact, and it's now 5 seconds after, compared to 5 seconds before. It's about 10 seconds fast, about 12 seconds fast or so, compared to, to Cami, but Cami's 2 seconds slow. So if I go, it's about 15, about 10 seconds fast compared to the true time, atomic time, based on the computer. So for Word Green, it's Cami and Phibi saying bye for now.